Hello and welcome to Effective Parenting. In just a moment, you're going to hear a live seminar presented by Dr. Scott Taransky and Joanne Miller. This seminar was presented before an audience of parents of toddlers. Young parents often have a lot of questions about raising their children. Those questions and their answers are important because families are developing patterns that will last a long time. Let's join Scott and Joanne as they begin this session.
As the Lord has been blessing Effective Parenting, it's been growing and a lot of things have been happening. One of the things that we've been doing is developing our website. And through our website, we get to hear from people all over the country. And sometimes we don't even know who's emailing us, but we get comments or questions or whatever. And so I just wanted to read an email to you from a graduate student that I thought was kind of funny. He says, "Hi, this is Luke Molds from Fisher, Minnesota. I wanted to email you to ask you how a baby affects a parent mentally, physically, and socially. Answer as soon as possible because it's due really soon. Thanks." Now, when I read that, I laughed because I thought, how could you ever answer a question like that? How does a baby affect you? You know, what kind of paper is he writing anyway? I thought that was really funny. Well, Scott thought he meant the baby was due really soon.
That's right.
Well, I don't know.
You better find out real quick.
None of us know how we're going to be affected until we have that baby.
Babies are fun. One dad told us that as he was walking out of the hospital, he was saying, "I can't believe they're letting us out of here with this thing. I have no idea what I'm doing with this baby." And I think that's how parents often feel when they take that baby home. But babies are fun. They are very stressful at first. They change the lives of their parents. They change the relationship often between the two parents. It's a stressful time as they are trying to figure out what that cry means, or how often should I change him, or what do I do about this kind of food, or whatever. All those things become a challenge. But there are those times when they're also a lot of fun, as you know, they smile at you during that first week or first month, and you're trying to figure out, did they see me or is it gas, you know? It's just a lot of fun to have babies, and I really like them. So, well, first I think we ought to do is define baby. You know, I like to say baby, but you have all these definitions for it. What is a baby?
Technically speaking, from medical profession, when we talk about in a newborn, that's from birth until 1 month. That's kind of the newborn stage. An infant, then it goes from 1 month to 12 months. So infancy is a stage of development up to a year. And then it's toddlerhood after that, until preschool. Babyhood is not one of the stages of development, but really,
they're all babies to me.
They're all babies.
So when we talk
about baby, it kind of encompasses everything. We may be talking somewhat about just infants tonight and toddlers, but baby kind of covers it all.
We want to share with you some significant principles to start out with, principles that will govern, we believe, where you're going to go with these kids, because you're going to have them for a while. Eventually, they'll be teenagers. But we believe that the principles that you instill now in family life, the way you function, how you operate in the course of your family, will determine a lot for you as your kids get older. So we believe that it starts. Parenting starts that first day when you bring that child home from the hospital. And the things you're building now are very important. So we want to give you some foundational issues that may guide the decisions you make in the course of things. There's no exact right way to raise a child because all kids are different. But we believe there are some things that are very important and helpful for all families.
You know, Scott is right that it's very stressful. I think you all realize that when you have your baby, you bring them home. Not only are we trying to evaluate some new ways of doing things and who's going to do what and how we're going to do it, but we're doing that in the context of sleep deprivation.
That's right.
We're all at our wit's end and we're trying to get along and deal with this baby, and there's a lot of new things going on. And so we want to share with you tonight just some general principles for those early couple of months as well as those first couple of years, and just some guidelines to help you through as you make some of the decisions. And we may not tell you exactly how to do what you need to do, but some guiding principles that will get you thinking about some things, not only for now, but that will affect your relationship with your child even down the road. We want those foundational principles to be set in place. But we don't want to be parenting our babies the way we want to parent our teenagers. We believe very strongly in parenting shifts, and we're going to deal with our infant differently than we deal with our toddler, differently than we're going to deal with a school-age child or the teenager. And I think sometimes those who teach about parenting or have some things to say, they'll take principles that are very important with teenagers and they try and apply them to their early years. And I think we get into trouble when we do that. You know, we talk about demand feeding. And some people get upset about that, you know, and they want to structure the baby right away because you have to teach him who's boss. Well, you're not going to allow your teenager to be demanding in one sense, but does demand feeding mean that we're teaching demandingness in our children? I think what we're doing is we're meeting their needs. So what we're going to be talking about is some things that do change as children grow and develop. Our children are developing very quickly that first year, those first couple of years. They're changing, their needs are changing, what they're able to do, the way they're looking at the world, all those things change very quickly. And so as parents, it's no wonder it's a stressful job. We're trying to keep up with them. You know, we're trying to figure them out. And we just get them figured out, and then they change into another stage. And we're like, you know, what's going on here? So we're going to give you some principles that deal with relationship, the relationship you have with your child, because that's going to carry you through even when they're changing developmentally, they're doing new things, they have new problems, new stresses are in your relationship. You want a foundation with that child that starts the day you bring them home, the day they're born, you start building that relationship between parent and child.
Now, what Joanne's saying about parenting shifts is very important. It's foundational to us because we believe that some people who write and teach about the family make a significant mistake. They're afraid of things that might be down the road, and so they're trying to overcompensate about those things early on. We think that's a mistake because, you see, children go through developmental stages. They change. And just when you think you've got something down at 6 months, they change and they're 9 months, and you've got to change the way you relate to them. At a year, you change the way. So we are continually making parenting shifts with our children. So we emphasize certain things at certain periods of time. We believe that the time between 0 and 12 months is a time when we allow the child to have a lot of needs met, even on their own schedule sometimes. In other words, we're catering to a particular kind of need that children have at that moment. Some people would say, well, we don't want them to be controlling us when they get to be teenagers, so we're going to, as soon as day one, when we bring them home from the hospital, we're going to put them on a feeding schedule. We don't believe that you have to do that. We don't believe that that's necessarily the best thing, and the reason is because there's something we want to emphasize with newborns and infants that is okay, and we'll emphasize it without being afraid that we're going to spoil them somehow down the road. So parenting shifts, think parenting shifts. What you do now, you may feel like is indulging your child or moving in a direction, but you may deal with change the way you relate to them later on. And the same thing is true as you're relating to your child now. You may be saying, I think it's time for a parenting shift. I think that the way I'm relating to my son or daughter right now is kind of a little bit old, and I need to make some changes now because I see some things I'm not happy with here. Or I think maybe it's time to put them on a more of a feeding schedule or a bedtime routine or something like that. So, or how long do we let them cry? All of those have to do not so much with what's right and what's wrong, but it has to do with how we're relating to our children and the kind of children they are and the kind of parents we are. All of that becomes really important in the process.
So what we want to do is we're thinking about how we need to respond to our child at each particular stage, is to look at what their needs are. What does this child need right now? And so we're going to go through a little bit chronologically here. First, we're going to talk about the newborn and the young infant. What does that child need? We believe that what that child needs most of all is to learn to have a positive view of who they are in the world, have a positive view of their family and their relationships within the family. The baby needs to learn to trust mom and dad. Mom and dad need to learn how to communicate with the baby. What do these cries mean anyway? You know, it's okay. If the baby's hungry, we believe it's good to feed the baby. If they're crying, they're asking for something. What do they want? Well, we're going to feed them. That doesn't mean that every time they cry, we feed them, though. We got to figure it all out. And that takes a lot of our time and attention. I think that's the way God set it up to be, because our babies need so much from us. And so we really want to be focused on them and trying to figure out the hungry cry is different than the angry cry. But what about the bored cry? Maybe the baby just needs to go for a walk in the stroller. They're fussy today. Let's get him out of the house and take him for a walk. What does this baby need today? And so that's what we want to be asking, because we want to be developing a relationship. We want our baby to know, our infant to know, that we're going to be there for them when they cry. That's the foundation of anything. We can't have discipline. We can't have structure. We can't be directing them if we don't have a relationship with them. So early on, those first months, we want to be developing that relationship, that when they cry, we respond to them. We want them to know we're there for them. I'm here to help you. If you have a problem, mom's here. Dad's here. The baby needs to know that. And so that's where we're really focusing when the child's very young.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because one mom I was just talking to this last week said, Between 0 and 12 months with my baby, every time my baby cries, I respond. Every time. There are others who say, if I respond every time my baby cries, won't I spoil that baby? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, and that's a common question. We're afraid of spoiling our babies. But, you know, you got to think about it. What does it mean to spoil a baby? It means that they expect to be picked up when they're crying. If they want to be picked up, they're going to cry. Is that also bad? That our child learns that if they're going to fuss, mom's going to be there to help them. Okay, we don't want to have a spoiled four-year-old. Every time they open their mouth, we're right there to solve their problem. See, but that's a parenting shift. Okay, when the baby is 3 months old, they're crying for a reason. And we want to be there for them and teach them that you can get the help you need. If you're going to do something, I want to know what it is. That doesn't mean we always pick them up. Sometimes we let them fuss a little bit, and maybe they're just, you know, gurgling a little bit. Maybe they're just making noise or burping. And that's okay. We don't always have to pick them up. We had one couple that was with their newborn. They were constantly, looking at the baby. Like, is she breathing? You know, and every time she made a noise, they were there to pick her up. And, you know, they were getting no sleep at all. They were up all night long because they wanted to, like, listen to her breathing all the time to make sure she was okay. That's an extreme. And we're not saying that you always have to be there constantly with your baby. And no parent can pick up their baby, really, every time they fuss or every time they need something. I mean, we need to do other things in our lives. But we don't want to put all those other things ahead of this baby's primary need, because they won't always be in that stage. There's going to be time to set limits. There's going to be times to teach them about waiting for someone else. There are going to be times to teach them to be others-focused, to be honoring, to obedient. All those things come down the road. But when they're tiny, what they need is to know that they're loved and there's someone there to care for them. You know, maybe they're not hungry. Maybe they're fussing because they just want that closeness. They've got emotional needs that need to be met. So we just bounce them a little bit. We may not feed them, but we take them with us, you know, as we walk around doing whatever we're doing, you know, in the kitchen, or we take them in the stroller or whatever. But we're there with them, giving them that emotional connectedness that's going to strengthen their character.
One dad said, my baby's been in the confined space for 9 months, and so now he comes out into this big world, and whenever he cries, I want to be there to help him deal with whatever's going on. Well, we like that kind of approach. There are some who are very... some authors who are very strong in this idea of control. You need to teach your children that you're in charge. Now, that's an important principle that we do want to teach children. We're going to talk about that principle, but we want to balance that with a lot of the honor stuff that we do. I mean, we honor our kids. Not that we don't just expect them to honor us. We honor them as well. And so we're trying to balance the two kinds of concepts as we work with them. Some children, when they're born, are colicky. They cry a lot. And so what do we do in those situations? Do we just let them cry? Our tendency is to suggest that those children have some real needs at that point. Maybe you don't need to eat all the time, but maybe they do need to be held a lot. Maybe they do need to be cared for. And what are we saying to our children at that time? We're saying that child's learning to say to themselves, if I cry, it means it makes a difference. If I have a problem, my mom's going to be there. We believe that we can emphasize that principle early on for children to give them a great sense of who they are, what they're doing, before we head into some of the other stuff that we're going to hit as we go on. So a good sense of, a positive sense of who they are is important as we proceed. You know, I just want to say something about developmental milestones. We're not talking here about ages, and it's rare that we're going to say to you in this evening that by the time they're 12 months, they ought to be here. Because all children are on their own kind of schedule. We can say there's a curve, and children kind of fit in a curve generally. But we're not so much looking for dates or birth dates or age appropriateness. What we're looking for is that they're passing certain milestones. So the rate may differ, but they generally pass the same ones in the course of their development. So we're looking for those things. How do we know when a child's ready to be potty trained? Are we seeing the precursors to that in their development? How do we know when they're ready to sleep through the night and we start putting a little pressure in that direction? What can we see? How can we know where we're going in that direction? We want to talk about those kinds of things as we proceed here.
But as we said, every baby's different. So even what one child is doing at one stage, your next child may not do it, or the neighbor's child, or, you know, your friend's child is not doing it at the same stage. So we want to be careful not to compare them. What we're looking for is progression. You know, one thing usually follows the next, and so we're looking for what may come next in our child's development, but we're not looking so much at age as we talk about development.
We were talking today about this idea of correcting infants and training infants, and a lot of it just happens in the course of things. Let's talk about discipline and bringing some discipline to the lives of children who are even 3 months old, or certainly as we go up. There's probably several things that we could say about this whole idea of discipline, but we can even do that with children that are very young and still have this positive sense of view that we want to instill in them.
I think when we talk about discipline as a whole, just in general, we want to start positive. And if we can direct our children in a positive way first, that's where we want to start. So, you know, rather than being negative with them, no, you can't do, no, you can't do that, we want to, you know, redirect them. As a child, you're changing their diaper, you know, maybe the six-month-old keeps rolling over. And instinctively, what do? We take a toy and we hand it to them. Try and keep them on their back for a few minutes so we can quickly change the diaper. I think for most of us, it even comes instinctually. Let's try and distract them so we can get our job done. That's a natural way to be correcting an infant. Just to keep them moving in the right direction. If they need help from us, we push them in the right direction. We don't allow them to continue in disobedience. We certainly don't need to get frustrated with them because they're rolling over. Sometimes it's fun. You know, they just learn to roll over and we're having a game and, you know, we roll them back and they think that's funny and we roll them. And, you know, sometimes little ones, they're just trying to figure out how the world works. And so they're reaching for something and you say no and they reach for it and you slap their hand and they reach for it again. It's kind of a cause and effect. Oh, that's interesting. I got hit when I did that. I wonder if that'll happen again. You know, they don't go through that process intellectually, but that, in a sense, can be what's going on there. They're not necessarily saying, ha, I'll show her. I'm going to get it anyway. You know, it's not necessarily a defiance with young children, but we want to be directing them in a positive way as much as we can, redirecting them, distracting them, showing them physically maybe what they need to be doing the right thing, but keeping it as positive as possible.
One of the things that parents often do is they project their own feelings on their children. For a mom to say, a six-month-old is, or maybe we go a little older than that. Let's go to a 12-month-old who's reaching for something a couple of times. And so immediately parents will sometimes impose their own thoughts. Oh, this is the beginning of teenage rebellion right here. I've got to squelch it. And really what Joanne's saying is that a child who's rolling over when you're trying to change him may be rolling over for a number of reasons. Maybe he's just playing a game. Maybe he's angry. Maybe he doesn't want to be changed. Maybe he'd rather be doing something else. There's a whole host of reasons why this might be. And how we handle that with young children may be differently than how we handle it with the 18-month-old who is also rolling over. So we need to approach this in different ways. Let's give some examples of some ways some young children might, I'm talking about really young, like 3-4 months, that might...
What could they possibly do wrong?
Well, I don't know. Parents report things all the time. What about...
Biting while breastfeeding. That's a big one. What do you do when your baby's biting, right?
Yeah, what
you know,
do you do?
And some people say that you need to hit them. They need to feel pain. Maybe what they need, though, is just to stop receiving the breast. The milk doesn't come out if you bite. You know, it doesn't work.
Biting doesn't work.
Okay? What we want to teach them is wrong behavior doesn't get you what you want. That's really an underlying principle in discipline. If you're going to ask, you know, the 5-year-old, if you ask in a whiny voice, you're not going to get it. It's the same thing we're going to even tell the baby. If they're going after it in the wrong way, they're not going to get what they want. Wrong behaviors don't work. And so that's kind of an underlying principle. So we distract them, we, you know, stop feeding them for a minute. You know, it's got to be brief, though, and they're not going to remember. So, you know, you just take them away for a little bit, and, you know, it doesn't work, and then we'll try again. And, you know, the baby's teething. They're having a hard time. They're not, you know, sometimes he bites me. Well, he's teething, okay? He's not being malicious. I don't think he's angry at you. And so we want to come away from that mindset that our children, yes, our children have a sin nature. We don't want to say they're completely innocent. But we don't want to go so far the other extreme to say that they're evil and they're out to get us either. You know, the baby who wakes up during the night, are they really trying to manipulate you with their crying? Some people would say yes. They're being manipulative. They're trying to get the parent in their room. Well, maybe they just need some comfort. And so we don't want to jump too quickly to have negative, put our own perceptions into what they're doing. because we really don't know what they're doing. And so, give them the benefit of the doubt, and let's give them what they need for now. And when you start seeing the demandingness or the negative stuff, the bad patterns coming, that's when we deal with it. But we don't want to be so afraid of developing bad patterns with our infants that we err on the side of withdrawing from them.
We like to emphasize nurture a lot in the first 12 months of a child's life, heavily emphasizing the positive dimension of things. But these children often do the wrong things, and wrong in the sense that they don't fit in with what you want to do. And if we can distract them, that would be the primary way that we would want to move them to something else. So by giving a child a toy to play with while you're changing the baby often distracts them enough so that they can avoid the problem of rolling over or causing resistance in the process. So,
let me give you another example. We had an email from a mother of a 9-month-old who was telling us her 9-month-old had a problem with anger because every time it was twin 9-month-olds, and the boy had a problem with anger because when the mom fed the girl, the boy would get mad. And I'm thinking, well, what's the problem here? And as we dialogued, he was putting his fingers in his mouth when she was trying to feed him, and she thought that was being rebellious. And I'm thinking, well, developmentally, that's what they need to be doing. They're learning about the world with their hands, and if you put food in there, and they're going to put their hand in there too and check it all out. So, again, as much as we can find out about our kids developmentally, what they're doing, if you don't want their fingers in their mouth while they're eating, then again, we distract them with a toy, we hold their hand, or, we get it in quick, and, here it comes up here, and, not when I say open, you open your mouth. There's people who will say that. You teach your child to open their mouth when you say open. I think that we can do more with our child in a creative sense and make life fun for them rather than just responding to commands.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over and rewind to continue this session.
Let's talk about after 12 months. I mean, you got the baby, you're holding them, and they always grab my glasses, or, they slap you, or they're biting. Some of them are biting at that point. Now, we're getting into some, also, here's an 18-month-old, and they're starting to play with their food, throw it on the floor. Let's talk about discipline on that level.
We got the 18-month-old who kind of stares you down. They got eye contact with you as they're pushing the food off the tray.
To see what you're going to do. That's right.
What's mom going to do? And that's the question. What's mom going to do? And so we need to be ready for that. When, defiance is going to come. Some of us think that our babies are angels, and they're never going to be defiant. But sure enough, they try it. Who's in control here is really what they're saying. And we want to be in control. We're not going to let them control the world. They may control their feeding schedule when they're 3 months old, but when they start that defiant stuff, after a year, 18 months, maybe sometimes they wait till they're two, but probably not many of them. what are we going to do? And I think we need to be prepared for that. Think ahead. How are we going to respond? The child's throwing his food on the floor. Maybe that means he's done eating. He's done. See ya. If they've had enough to eat for that day. If they were hungry, they'd be putting it in their mouth. If they're not hungry, they're throwing it on the floor. You got to decide what are you going to do at that point. But you need to be clear with them because they're asking the question, who's in control? What are you going to do about it? And especially if you've already told them, don't touch the TV or whatever it is, or you say, I'm going to spank your hand if you do that, then you got to do it. So you have to think ahead. What is the consequence for this child? And then be ready to do it. And we can't do a lot of dialoguing with them at 18 months old. They're not going to remember necessarily. So we need to just be there and be consistent with them, whatever. And sometimes still it's distraction. We get them out of the way. We don't allow them to disobey. We don't allow them to continue in the disobedience. We distract them, we remove them, remove the object, whatever. But we're talking about the rules at the same time.
What we're doing is we're making a parenting shift, you see. We're moving from infancy where we're trying to satisfy their needs and meet their needs when they need them met, to a place where we're now starting to exert some of our own agenda on them. We're trying to have them feed on a different schedule, maybe one that we set up. We're trying to set them up on a schedule for bedtimes. How do you know when it's time for a child to start having a regular bedtime in the evening? Those are things we're starting to impress upon our children during that toddler time that they need to respond. When we say, no, don't touch that cord, then if they touch it, then we're going to do something about it. We're going to give them some kind of a consequence. Whether that consequence is a slap on the hand or whether it's pulling them away, whatever it is, we're communicating that this is not acceptable and we're going to do something about it. So at this point, we're starting now the beginning of some discipline techniques even that we use, we suggest in our books. We've written two books, 8 Secrets to Highly Effective Parenting, which is the primary one we'll speak about here, and the other one is Say Goodbye to Whining, Complaining, and Bad Attitudes in You and Your Kids. Now, the first book shares two techniques that we think are very helpful that we're going to start implementing with children, young babies, toddlers. We're going to use taking a break, and we're going to use a positive conclusion. Now, you may use a slap on the hand, but the point is we're getting them out of the situation, and the next thing that has to happen is we're coming back for a hug. All those are precursors to what's going to be happening later on as they get to be preschoolers. As we make another shift, they become more verbal. We're going to start dialoguing with them every time they make an offense, as we talk about in our book. So we're just setting patterns now for them as they're growing into this that we think are very important.
As we start limit setting with the mobile child, we're going to be sensitive to our tone of voice too. I think sometimes we want them to stop what they're doing, but at the same time we think they're cute. And that comes through in the way that we communicate. Babies are very sensitive to tone of voice. You know, so you say, now, don't touch that. What does that mean? They may not even understand the words, but they understand your tone of voice by now because they've been listening to your tone of voice for many months already. And that tone of voice is, isn't it cute? So we need to be careful. If we're going to be firm about something, let's say it in a way that's firm and communicate even with their tone of voice, no, we're not going to tolerate that behavior. You may not do that. Whether it be a don't touch or, you know, we're going to keep it brief. We're not going to give them a lecture, but it can be don't touch or no or be gentle or be kind or whatever it is. But we're going to say it with a tone of voice that communicates that we mean business. This is different than would you like to go to the park or don't you look cute today? You know, I need to wash your face is said differently. So we need to be sensitive to our own tone of voice and the things that we're communicating as we're setting limits.
Now, what you're doing here is you're trying to establish some clear lines of authority so that the child knows, is starting to learn the difference between right and wrong. You're building conscience. All of those things are very important with a two-year-old. And so when you see them and they know they're doing something wrong, that's really important. When they know they're running away from you and they're doing it to get away from you and they know they're doing the wrong thing, you have an obligation as a parent to discipline them so they don't like it. Okay. In other words, what you're doing at that point is you're showing them that when they do something wrong and they know it's wrong, you are going to take some kind of action to stop that behavior. It's not acceptable. And we're going to do that right away from the beginning. Whenever we see that, whenever they start to take action and you know that they know that what they're doing is wrong, you have to respond to it.
You know, let's just talk about limit setting back up just for a minute, because sometimes I think we're hesitant to do that because we don't want to inhibit them. You know, oh, they're only 2 years old. You know, how much can we really expect from that 2 year old? And so we want to just give them a lot of freedom and let them, you know, be themselves. And some of that's okay because we want them to be free in a safe environment. But we also want them to learn that limits are set in the world. We live in a world of order. And I think we as adults have learned that there's freedom within limits and that we all need rules and regulations so that we can be free. And our children need to learn that too, that there are certain behaviors that are not acceptable. And sometimes as parents, we feel like the bad guy, making them stop doing what they're really having fun doing. So we want to come back and remember the reason that we're teaching them to stop or to listen or to live within limits, partly is just for teaching them a responsiveness to authority. They need that to be successful in life. They need to learn that they're not the center of the universe and they can do whatever they want. They need a responsiveness to authority, and they need to develop self-control. And so we work on self-control as they get into the preschool years. But even as a toddler, they can begin to learn a responsiveness to authority, that there's someone over them setting the rules, setting the limits, keeping them safe, providing for their needs, but being firm with those boundaries too. It's in their best interest. So we need to remember that as parents, that sometimes we don't feel like disciplining. We will feel like letting them get away with it this time because we're tired. But being consistent with the boundaries we've set up is real important. So we're going to choose our battles. We may not fight over every little thing. We might remove a lot of the fragile stuff just so we don't have to fight that battle. Give them a safe environment to play in. But when they do cross the line, be there to point it out and pull them back in.
What we're trying to do is establish some order in this two-year-old's life. And we do it in a couple of different ways. One is through correction. When they start doing something wrong, we're going to stop them and take action. The other is through instruction or just being proactive. We start setting up routines. We start saying that our bedtime is a certain time. We start having them eat on a schedule or have snacks. All of those things start happening. So there's two different ways that we're approaching the teaching process to bring order into their lives. One is through correction, but that's not the only one. We're also doing it through the instruction and the setting up of routines, patterns. Patterns that they can recognize whenever they come, so that these patterns are going to encompass all kinds of things. But you want to look for ways so that your son or your daughter can see the patterns coming. They know when mom or dad are leaving. We'll talk about separation anxiety. They know what it means to be done eating. What does it mean when you're done eating? How does a child supposed to, have you taught them when they're done eating what they're supposed to do? What does bedtime look like? What does morning look like when it's time for them to get up? What does it look like when it's time to change the diaper? All of those things are important, and we're starting to set up routines. So we're saying the same kind of things over and over again. We're kind of talking through the routines. We're setting up order for these children so that they can develop some sense of the order in our universe.
Children really do best with routines, regular nap schedules, regular bedtimes. Their bodies learn to go to sleep at a certain time. They just get into that pattern. If the child's in bed at 7 o'clock every night, they learn their body's ready to go to sleep then at 7 o'clock. And we can't always stick to that. Sometimes we have to be flexible with other things. But regular nap times and bedtimes are helpful. Regular eating times. As Scott said, setting up routines so the child knows what to expect. Making the world predictable for them is helpful so then they know how to respond to it. We're teaching them over and over again because kids learn by repetition. I just want to go back to that idea of conscience for a minute. We're developing conscience in our children. It doesn't just come naturally. They don't naturally know right from wrong, but we're developing that in them. What we want to do is associate positive and negative feelings to what they're doing. Because babies are emotional. Infants are emotional. Toddlers are emotional. That's how they learn, kind of through their emotions. And so we want doing the right thing to feel good. You know, if we call them and they come walking over to us or running over us, you give them a big hug. This is great. You came when I called. That's great. We want them to feel good about doing the right thing. Same thing, we want them to feel bad about doing the wrong thing. You know, and maybe that has to be physically painful. Maybe it has to be emotionally painful. But it doesn't feel good to do the wrong thing. But we want it also to feel good to do the right thing. So a lot of positive reinforcement, a lot of verbal praise, touching, hugging, fun, laughter, singing, dancing, all those things, when our kids are making right choices, is also really important.
Which means we also have relational routines. When a child's done the wrong thing, they ought to know that every time there's a hug afterwards, that we're teaching them that we're coming back for a positive conclusion after every offense to deal with the tension that might exist otherwise, so they don't have to go around living with a guilty conscience. They can have that relationship restored. Let's talk about mealtimes a little bit. And eating with these children, because it seems, first of all, that children are on varied schedules. I would suggest that some children, they'll eat a lot and then they won't eat very much. And parents often get worried about that, and it becomes a problem for them for mealtimes, knowing what to do about it.
Yeah, and mealtime can be a difficult issue in a lot of families because you don't really know what your child needs. And if we go too far in one direction, it becomes a power struggle, and we don't want to do that. But I would say even if we go back to this idea of demand feeding or scheduled feedings and all that, even that is difficult because children have varying appetites at varying times and different growth spurts and different caloric needs and emotional needs that they're all being tied into this idea of mealtime. And even as they get older, mealtime is a social time. It's not just nurturing their body. But there's something else that goes on with mealtime for us. And so we want to be careful not to make it a negative experience, not to let it carry too much weight, you know, always kind of be trying to figure out, well, you had something from the bread group, so you need something from the meat group, and, you know, balancing out their diet every day and keeping track of what they're eating. I think sometimes we can take that a little too seriously. And it's amazing to me how little they can eat. And they do fine. They're healthy. And so really the question is my child healthy? And not what are they eating? Because it's also amazing how quickly they change their desires and what they like. You know, they might want, you know, one food, 3 meals a day for 2 weeks, and then they don't want to see it again. And they're into something else, you know, and somehow their body works it all out, so it's okay. So we want to give them healthy choices, but we don't want to get too hung up on, you know, if they eat the same thing for every meal. Somehow it works for them, and you know, they do okay. And if we start forcing them to eat things they don't want, then that's when we start running into some behavior problems, some food problems, and stuff like that. So we try to stay away from that.
And children's tastes change too. I mean, they might not like peas when they're when they're 6 months old. If you start to feed a vegetable at 6 months or 9 months, then they might not like it at that point. But when they're 18 months and eat these little balls running around their table, you know, they may like them at that point. So children change. I guess what
then
we're
they
trying
don't like them again at 6 years old. But
that's right. What we're trying to say here is that mealtimes are not just for consuming food. Mealtimes are social times, and we want to get that social benefit with our children so that they can enjoy the relationship that takes place. And parents are trying sometimes to prevent problems in their children nutritionally, but then end up creating problems in regards to food by making food an issue. So they'll say, well, you don't need it, we'll put it in the refrigerator, you can eat it for breakfast. You know, I would just suggest that you throw it away. You know, let's go, let's start tomorrow fresh again. You know, it becomes a power struggle, gets to be an issue, and we believe that a lot of the worrying that parents do is unnecessary from a physical, medical standpoint, and the emotional needs are really important at that time too. So even a baby who's breastfeeding may continue to breastfeed after milk's gone. Why? Often because they want that social component, you know, that the nurturing, the sucking, is just that there's a benefit from that that they receive. And all the way through, as we're working with our kids, we want to also consider the emotional, the social component in mealtime, so that mealtimes are a fun place to be. It's important. Whether they're infants or toddlers, all the way through the process, eating is an important part of the whole dimension.
Yeah, I think sometimes parents are concerned that if I don't have them eating a variety of food now, or if I don't force them to try things now, when they grow up, they're not going to eat a variety of food.
Did it work with you? Oh, many of our parents said that, you know. You're going to force you to eat green beans now so you'll learn how to eat them when you get older. I don't know. Does it work?
And then you never eat them when you're older because you had to eat them when you were a kid. So I'm just not sure that whole philosophy carries through.
Let's talk about sleep patterns and working with children, because sometimes, and eating and sleeping go together often with the infant, because they're up in the middle of the night feeding how do you know when the child can miss that feeding in the night and sleep through the night? I mean, I'm sure one of the answers is that it's different
for
every child. Yeah, they keep sleeping. They don't wake up. But I know some children, you know, they wake up every couple of hours,
yeah.
You know, and should parents go in and help them at that point? Should they let them cry it out? I mean, we're inclined to use this as a process to work with children and try to teach them a number of things. What do you want to say?
There's a lot to be said. Let's see. Are we asking, are babies supposed to sleep? When are babies supposed to sleep through the night?
Why don't you start there? How do you know when a baby can sleep through the night?
I think they start sleeping through the night.
Okay, but now sometimes they become dependent on that nighttime bottle, or they wake up crying, and so you go in, and then you're thinking, is it time now to take away that 2 o'clock feeding and allow them to cry it out for a little bit and go back to sleep? And so we've gone through that process with our kids. You know, eventually they don't just happen to sleep through the night. We have to exert a little bit of control in their lives in order to help them get over the bottle addiction or whatever it is.
Yeah, and some baby is true. We kind of teach them that the way to go to sleep is to drink until you fall asleep. And so every time they wake up, they think they need something to drink so they can fall back asleep again. And what they really need to do is learn how to go to sleep without that. And so the child who wakes up in the middle of the night, if they don't need to, they don't really need to eat. You can see during the day their feedings are spreading out. They're not eating as often. They're eating more each time. Maybe they're eating solids now. They don't really need the calories during the night. But what they might need is you just to let them fuss a little bit. But if they don't go right back to sleep, maybe to go in and pat them on the back, rub them, sing them a song. Teach them that they can go back to sleep without having to eat to fall asleep. And it's kind of a gradual thing, because eventually we want them to learn that they can wake up, roll over, go back to sleep without even mom or dad there. You know, some people think that babies shouldn't wake up during the night, but that's not really true. We all wake up during the night. We roll over and go back to sleep. Sometimes we don't even remember in the morning that we woke up. But our babies are going to wake up during the night. The trick is, what are they going to do when they wake up? And so it can be a gradual process of not feeding them, but being there for them, letting them know it's okay, but you need to stay in your bed. You know, if they're tiny, we might be holding them. They just might need that closeness for a little bit, and then we put them back down. When they get a little older, we might not pick them up again. Some of it is the patterns we see. You know, if they're going longer and longer for when they're waking up again, they're doing okay. But if the waking up is getting closer and closer, then we have a problem. You know, if you've got a 9-month-old who's waking up every half hour and you have to go back in and settle them down again, okay, now we're starting to have a problem. That's different than the 9-month-old waking up once and they just need a little reinforcement to go back to sleep again. So you have to look at the pattern that's developing and not be afraid of a pattern. Say, oh, I can't go in now at 6 months old because I'm going to develop a bad pattern. But once that pattern starts and you see it, then it's time to start making some changes.
Now, there are a lot of practical things you can do. I mean, some parents will get a clock and put it in the bed, or, you know, they get the little stuffed animal that they can hold on to, or they'll do a number of things. But what we're trying to suggest here, we're balancing two things. We want our children to be independent and sleep through the night when they're ready, but we also want to nurture them along the way. So if a child's crying, you go into the room and they're standing up at the crib yelling at the top of their lungs, you may have been in the habit of taking them out of bed, giving them a bottle, but now you're going to say, okay, lay down, I'm going to rub your back, and you help them get back to sleep. Now what we've done is we've taken the bottle out of the picture. And so we're not just saying, okay, no bottle. We heard this one parent say this week, goes in at 8 o'clock at night and says, says to her 9-month-old. Did you say
9-month-old. I'm not coming back till morning.
You know, we just feel like there's a number of things happening all at the same time here. And not only are we dealing with feeding kinds of issues, but we're dealing with the nurture kinds of things. And so it may be a gradual process. You come in, you lay them down, say, okay, I'm going to rub your back, and you help them fall asleep. And you come out, go back to bed, and maybe they do cry a couple hours later at first. And so you come in, rub their back again, and you've cut the bottle out, but now you're dealing with the crying. It may be that you hear them fussing in the night, and you might not go in right away now, and you want to wait to see, is this one of those times where I need to go in, or do I just let them alone, and maybe they'll take care of themselves? So sometimes we jump in too quickly at that point. We need to let our kids solve their problems, be independent. But if they're crying for, you know, 15 minutes or a half hour, maybe we do need to go in and just talk to them or settle them down somehow in order to help them be reassured, in order to balance two things. See what we're trying to do? We're trying to balance nurture and we're trying to balance the control, both at the same time. So we're not we don't give the kind of advice that says you can get your kids to sleep through the night in 1 week. Just do it. You know, we think there's too much at stake here. There's relationship at stake, and while we're teaching our children the structure in life, we want to nurture them along in the process. We're going to do it all along the way. We're going to do it when they become teenagers. We're going to do the same thing. Maybe not at bedtime, sleep times, but we're still going to balance those two concepts.
Teaching them how to meet their own needs, but we're not going to just withdraw our help in the process. We're going to be there kind of training them, showing them the way to do it. And, you know, the sleeping through the night thing is one of those issues that just comes up over and over again, because you might get them to miss the feeding and sleep for 6 hours at one stage, but then they go through a growth spurt, and all of a sudden they're awake again, and they're hungry in the middle of the night. Now what do you do? And you just get that settled, and then they start teething. Yeah. You know, and then, heaven forbid, they're sick, or you're on vacation, and so then we got to keep working with them, and then, you know, before you know it, you're potty training, and they have to get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, and then they have nightmares, and, you know, we're constantly bringing them back to the, you know, okay, I'm here, but you can sleep. You know, we want to help them deal with all those issues. Help them deal independently with the issues, but the issues keep changing, so we always got to keep going back and helping them deal with this next issue. And we always want to communicate to them, hey, if you need me, I'm here for you. That's what we want to still be saying when they're 14 and 15 and have a problem. If you need me, I'm here for you. And so that's kind of the underlying message through all of this. Yeah, I'm going to help you to be independent, give you the skills you need to be successful. But if you need me, I'm here for you. So it's a continual balance. And that's why there's no clear-cut answers. You got to do it this way or you got to do it that way. Because how the child responds to that, how quickly they learn it, how your personality plays into that is different in every family. So again, you want to be thinking, well, what am I teaching this child? What's coming through in the way I'm responding to them? And then make some adjustments there if you need to.
We're trying to balance two things. Nurture and control. just don't go to either of the extremes. If you're too nurturing, then your children are not going to learn the control they need, the self-discipline. We're disciplining them so they can learn responsiveness to authority and so that they can learn self-discipline, self-control. Those are the things we're trying to teach them and instill in them when they're two. Not when they're before that, I mean, not when they're in the first 12 months, but in that second year, we're really trying to work on these issues. In the 3 to 5 year stage, that's a primary thing we're working on. We're trying to help children learn self-control, self-discipline, skills. There are a number of them in the preschool years that we try to focus on.
This is the end of tape one. Please place tape two in your cassette player to continue this session.